Hey everyone, welcome to the Delta Flyers with Tom and Harry as we journey through episodes of Star Trek Voyager. Your two hosts along this journey are my fellow Trek actor and star of the 1992 television series Going to Extremes, Robert Duncan McNeil, and myself, your favorite forever ensign, Garrett Wong. Remember, you can get the full version of this podcast by signing up to become a patron at patreon.com/the Delta Flyers.
92 Going to Extremes. Whoa.
Woo-hoo, doggy.
That's deep.
Well, Robbie, I mean, I got to say, one of your most exciting, adventuresome stories was from when you were filming Going to Extremes, when you had to fight off intruders in your rental house.
I had hand-to-hand combat with cat burglars, two of them. Two of them in my condominium unit where I was living while we filmed that show.
On a cliff.
It was built on the side of a cliff looking down at the water below. I mean, the cliff was probably, 20 feet high, and there was a little bit of room to walk between the building and the edge of the cliff, like 5 feet or so.
Right.
Yeah, it was a second floor condo on that cliff.
Yeah.
Woke up, didn't know what was happening, heard noise, woke up, and I jumped up like a caveman. Noises came out of me that I never knew existed.
Well,
and then there was this sort of like scuffling.
Right. But they had entered into the master bedroom window, correct?
Yes.
Isn't that the window they came into? So that's
because
the sound
we had
you
left
heard.
That open for the ocean breeze.
Exactly.
And thinking we were on the second floor in a secure, guard gated condominium complex. We thought it would be safe, but no. They had found their way in and scuffled. And anyway, they escaped. I, scuffled with them, but I don't know what I would have done if I had been able to hold on to one of them. Yeah. I don't know what was I going to do with them?
But you didn't explain why you weren't able to hold on to one of them.
Well, the reason, so I guess because of tourism, they know a lot of tourists are coming with no weapons or self-defense other than, nothing. There's no guns or knives or anything coming in the country. So they decide they put on little bikini bathing suits or whatever.
Speedos.
And they grease their bodies so that if you do wake up like I did and you get your hands on them, you can't hold on. If you grease up your body, it's like you can't, there's no grabbing or holding. They can just pull off and run. And that's what happened both. And it was surreal. I didn't know what was happening. I'm like trying to grab and hold one down and I can't hold on. It just, it was surreal. The whole thing was very surreal.
I feel like there might be some up and coming MMA fighters that are listening to this and thinking, this is how I win. I'm going to slather myself with Crisco.
Crisco grease, or I don't know what it would have been, but it was very, and I didn't know that's what it was until after it was over and a local Jamaican told me,
that's a technique they use. There. Yeah.
It's a common technique for cat burglaring.
Yeah. And you did turn into the
cave. There's no clothes or anything to hold on to.
Right.
Because they're in these little bikini speedos.
Yeah. Yeah. And you told me that at this point, it was you, your wife at the time, and your one child. You didn't have anyone. You only had one child.
Yeah, you only had little Taylor. Daughter, and she was two, turned two.
Right.
And she was sleeping in the bed between us, and she slept through the whole thing.
She didn't even wake up during the grapple. Oh, interesting.
But I'm shocked that I don't know that scene. I feel like she might have been traumatized as a 2-year-old, not knowing, knowing this is scary. And so she just shut down and shut her eyes or something.
Yeah.
I don't know. Somewhere deep in her subconscious, I'm sure my daughter was traumatized because it was a scary thing.
Oh, definitely. Know? And to turn into that caveman protector, which you did. At least you got him out of there. Yeah.
I think there's the noises I made scared them.
you were grunt. What did you do?
It was like a
So you sounded like Bigfoot, is what you're trying to say.
It was just sound. It was like animalistic sound.
It was the mating call of Sasquatch. Yes, I'm really, exactly. really impressed with that. Exactly. Okay. Yes. Okay. All right. Anyway, I'm glad you shared that story with all of our listeners. It is truly one of the more amazing stories. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to re-traumatize you on that one. But I have to have a new intro until we finish all the episodes. So I've got to pull from very obscure, you know, things such as going to extremes. Yes. And I'm going to find even more. So, okay. So this week's episode, thank goodness we're here finally, Bride of Chaotica. My goodness, so excited. Okay, so let's just, you know, let's go and watch this episode.
I can't wait to watch this.
I'm so excited. It's been a while. Yes, it has been a while. All right, everyone, we will be right back with our review, recap, and discussion of Bride of Chaotica. Everybody, we are back from watching Bride of Chaotica.
Oh my gosh.
Ooh, that's a chock full episode. That my goodness.
Huge.
It's a huge app. So much action, so many things happening, and a lot of little tiny details I never noticed.
So many little details.
I have a lot of things. I'm sure you have a lot of things to talk about.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, okay. it was great.
Let's just dive right into this, starting with our poetry synopsis. Here we go. This is my haiku for Bride of Chaotica. Proton won't shut down. Fifth dimension battles doom. Death ray disabled.
You covered a lot.
I did. It was very difficult because this episode was so full of everything, and it was so difficult to come up with just the essence
you
of this
covered
episode.
A lot. I'm very impressed. I got to say, was the hardest limerick
to ever do in your entire.
I still feel like I went back and forth. I changed the rhyming words so many times trying to figure it out. But
wow,
we'll see. I think you know, this one covers as much as I could possibly cover, but we'll see. All right, here we go with a limerick.
Let's hear it.
Chaotica rules the fortress of doom. Voyager is stuck and can't resume. Tom enlists Janeway.
Captain Proton versus the Death Ray.
And victory is clinched by the Queen's perfume.
Oh,
there you go.
Yeah.
All right.
Very nice.
All right.
Very nice. But you were struggling with, what were the other words you were trying to rhyme with other than doom? You were trying to.
I've deleted them all, but it was all just gone. Everything, you know.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Okay. Well, you still came through in the end. That's all that matters.
It was close. It was close. Let's talk about the behind the scenes and the actor's first teleplay by Brian Fuller and Michael Taylor. Mm-hmm. I know Brian Fuller loved this episode, and we will be talking to Brian about this episode for our Patreon patrons. That'll be in the bonus material, but really excited to hear his thoughts about writing this episode. So much fun. Brian and Michael did a great job.
Well, okay. So Brian and Michael collaborated on the teleplay, but the story idea is Fuller's idea. So
Fuller.
It's all Brian Fuller on this one. So can't wait to talk to him. That'll be super, super, super cool and super fun.
Really fun. Alan Craker directed the episode.
Yep.
So good. Yeah. There's a couple of scenes in here that I feel like, again, a masterclass. He just did such a beautiful job of staging and shot making in the scenes that Alan just did a great job. And his energy, you know, Alan was always like, he'd get really passionate.
Yes,
and
he would.
And had a ton of energy. And I feel like for this kind of melodrama of Captain Proton, he was the perfect director.
We needed that.
he helped the actors to find the comedy and the energy. It was really good.
Yeah.
So our guest stars, Martin Rayner as Dr. Chaotica. We loved Martin. So, so good. We will also be talking to Martin about this episode. So again, you know, if you're not signed up, sign up for Patreon and you can get the bonus interviews and the bonus material on our Patreon site. But Martin Rayner did a phenomenal job in the episode.
He did.
His first job that I could find was in the movie Victor Victoria. He was a concierge in that movie. So Yeah, that's a pretty auspicious start. That's an iconic film, Victor Victoria.
Yeah, who's the star of that? Julie Andrews?
Julie Andrews, yes, playing the cross-dressing performer. She performs as a man, but she's a woman playing Victor and Victoria. So great film. We also have Nicholas Wirth played Lonzak. The head henchman.
I can't believe I even remembered his name. Do you remember that? I was like, hey, Lonzak. It's ingrained in my memory now.
Nicholas Wirth was so good. Again, everyone in this episode was great.
Yeah.
Sadly, Nicholas Wirth passed away in 2007.
Ah.
69 years old, passed away. He was from St. Louis, Missouri.
Okay.
So his sort of big theatrical, slightly British accent obviously was from his theater training or just as an actor. He did a great job with that because he's from St. Louis, Missouri, Midwestern guy. Nicholas Wirth's first job was a movie called For Pete's Sake in 1966. Oh,
okay.
Yes.
66 when you were two. Yes.
And I just want to mention Tarek Ergun, who played the robot, did a great job.
He did.
Very funny interaction. I have some memories of that. Mm-hmm. And he also played Lieutenant Aiella. So he had two roles in this episode. He's the robot and Aiella, because he had a little exchange with Neelix in the mess hall.
Yes.
Where Neelix was talking to him. So he was all over this episode.
Tarek. He was.
Now, I could not find the actors' names who played the photonic aliens as Men in Black. I couldn't find them.
They're not in the
credit
list? They're
not listed. I could not find them.
How's that even possible? They had so much dialogue. That one, the main guy had a lot of dialogue.
Yeah.
He's not in there.
Could not find him listed. So
wow.
That is a mystery to me, but I thought he did a great job and our photonic aliens were wonderful.
Yes.
Yeah. That's all I got.
Oh, and we have Kirsten Turner as Constance Goodhart, Captain Proton's secretary.
That's true.
We've seen her before. Now we see her again. And we also will be talking to Kirsten Turner later. So please check out the Patreon feed and you'll be able to get everything regarding this show.
Do you know what? I was looking before and I must have overlooked it because our photonic alien, the actor's name is Jim Krestelude. Krestelude. Yes, he was a day player originally hired on the movie Star Trek Generations.
Oh.
Yes.
Okay.
And he also appeared with Mackenzie Westmore, Michael Westmore's daughter, on the soap opera Passions.
Passions. Okay.
So Jim Krestelude, I did find it. Sorry, I must have just overlooked that.
That's okay. Jim Krestelude. Okay. Did the other alien speak at all or was it just Jim? Okay.
Just Jim.
The other one sort of nodded and got shot.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's our actors, our writers, our director, our amazing group of behind the scenes and on camera people. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about the story. Here we go. Yeah.
Let's jump in.
First thing is the amazing opening credits of Captain Proton. Mm-hmm. I immediately started giggling. I was just laughing. I love that they open on kind of old fashioned credits. And I got to say, after I finished this episode, I thought they spent a lot of time in a black and white story. And that's a big risk for a studio and a network because black and white, a lot of people, if they're flipping channels and they see something in black and white, they just don't like black and white old stuff. And so they'll flip right by it. So I think the studio network felt like creatively it was the right thing to do to show this in black and white, but they knew they were going to lose some viewers that would just flip by because they just don't like black and white stuff. So I was amazed at how much of this episode, most of the episode was in Captain Proton in the black and white world. I would say easily half, if not more.
Right. But I'm going to say that I think those fears are unfounded because this is still the most popular, one of the most popular holodeck programs in Star Trek history is Captain Proton. And whether it's in black and white or color, it doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
And frankly, from when it comes down to t-shirts, you know, over the years, I've sort of had t-shirts for sale. The Captain Proton t-shirt, which I gave you one, you have one of my Captain Proton shirts, has been hands down the most popular shirt.
Really?
Hands down, yes. And so I want to do a quick plug here. If any of you want a Captain Proton t-shirt, ladies cut or unisex, foreverensign.com. Check it out. You can get your very own. Shirts.
I told you one time I was in Atlanta when I was living in Atlanta. I went to the dog park and there was somebody in the dog park with your shirt on.
I was like, yes, you did say that.
out in the wild. I've seen a t-shirt out in the wild.
Refresh my memory. Did you walk up to them and talk to them? Or no? No, you just saw it. You just saw it and went, there it is.
So, yeah.
Okay. So funny. That makes sense.
So the opening credits come up and there's a narrator who's kind of setting the table, setting the scene for this episode of Captain Proton.
Who is that narrator?
I don't know.
For a split second, I thought it was Cosmo.
Really?
I did. Because I was like, God, that kind of sounds like Cosmo.
It does kind of sound like Cosmo.
Yeah.
But I think that they would have used someone in the loop group. And the loop group is the people that do ADR or, you know, recording dialogue after the show is cut together for group scenes or, you know, mess hall rumble, you know, mumbling in the mess hall.
Sort of
or
background chatter.
They do that. Yeah. They use some people called loop group. Mm-hmm. And there's usually a half dozen or so people in there.
Yeah.
And they will make it sound like a bigger group or a small group.
Right.
And they'll sometimes pull people out of loop group for off camera lines.
Okay.
And I bet you that they have
this is one of them. Yeah. Well, whoever it is, they did a great job.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They did a great job. We come in on Captain Proton's ship and Buster Kincaid and Captain Proton, Harry Kim and Tom Paris. They're watching this screen that's filling them in on the game they're about to play, the episode they're about to play. And I just made a note, the set deck and props and everything as they reveal this place. Again, amazing, really amazing scenic work. These sets were incredible.
The set designer just went above and beyond. And just, I would say almost every single element, not only just set design, but Bob Blackman's wardrobe. My gosh. Oh, yeah. I mean, the wardrobe was amazing for Chaotica, for Arachnia. And then the music in the background. That was the symphony. Wasn't the symphony?
Yeah, the music was
the orchestra, right?
It was David, I forget his name. I made a note of it later.
Okay.
I think it's David Bell, I think.
Okay.
Right? Something like, anyway, the music was phenomenal.
Yeah.
The music was really, because it was that classic old Hollywood.
So they didn't take stock footage or stock music from, and you know, like a Flash Gordon from 1930s. They actually composed and recorded our regular background symphony that does all our music. They did that for this too. So you know what? They probably had a blast doing this too.
If you think about it,
they're like, oh my gosh, we get to do what? Vintage sort of sci-fi music?
Vintage style sci-fi music.
Really good job.
We do learn that the setup, the narrator tells us, as Tom Paris and Harry Kim are watching the setup for the game they're about to play, that Constance Goodhart has been kidnapped by Dr. Chaotica, and he's going to sacrifice her to Queen Arachnia. Mm-hmm. She's the queen of the Swider people. We've never met them before.
Right.
We also hear that Captain Proton has traveled millions of miles, which made me laugh. And in the recap, he said... something about, and he burst into flames. The ship crashed and burst into flames. And so as we come out of the recap and the narrator disappears, and by the way,
it's Harry that's like, what? We didn't burst into flames in that last chapter.
So. Yeah. He goes, yeah, we didn't burst into flames. And then he said, that didn't happen. And Harry says, oh yeah, cliffhangers. And Paris says, the lost art of hyperbole.
Right.
Which is a classic already. They're sort of nodding to a self-aware, like that's what we do on Trek. We have cliffhangers at the end of an act before commercial break. We have cliffhangers. We don't have previously on Star Trek. We didn't do that.
Right.
But there's always these cliffhangers, and Brian Fuller and Michael Taylor wrote that, all these kind of references about how we do what we do on Star Trek, wrote it in.
Yeah.
It was great. I also love when the recap went away, the view screen looked like it was this round view screen in the Captain Proton thing. And it looked like the old, remember when television used to, you're probably maybe too young, but when I was a little kid, TV went off the air at like midnight or 12:30 or something.
Right.
It would go off the air. They'd say signing off. They'd play the Star Spangled Banner. Yeah. And then this thing would come up that looked like that. It looked like just black and white. I don't know what it was. Yeah.
And I do remember that. I'm not too young for that. I do recall that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So basically we're heading to Planet X to confront mm-hmm. Chaotica. And now Tom and Harry are just kind of walking around on the planet, and mm-hmm. we end up, well, at least Harry is the one that catches it. He sees this very strange anomaly. He calls Tom over, and now we're staring at some energy anomaly. We don't know what it is. It's yeah. just formed, and clearly this is not part of the program. Something is wrong. We jump to the bridge.
Before we do that, I just want to say, when we're walking by the caves,
yeah.
it's our old cave set. It's the same yes. cave set that was built for the next generation.
Yes.
It's the same cave set that we've been using. Mm-hmm. It was a pretty big set, but it wasn't that big. When we would film episodes, you would reuse the same tunnel entrance and the mm-hmm. same, open area and the same. So there's some dialogue in here where Harry says, as we're walking by, he goes, boy, Planet X looks kind of familiar. What's the last place? He goes, what's the last place we went to? And Paris goes, the mines of Mercury. And Harry goes, they're identical. And Paris goes, yeah, sets were expensive.
I didn't even catch that part.
They literally are writing in.
They're writing in what we are dealing with on our own show, which is
exactly what Voyager dealt with. The same sets are expensive. We're going to keep writing to the same.
Love it.
He wrote it into the dialogue. Anyway, I loved it.
I love it. Okay, so we jump to the bridge, and now we've dropped out of warp. Gravimetric forces are all around the ship, mm-hmm. and these forces are disrupting our power flow. Tuvok reports we have no access to communications, deflector, weapons. Mm-hmm. So Janeway's perplexed. She's like, wait a minute. We'll scan for vessels, tractor beams, anything that might explain what is holding us here, why we cannot move.
Mm-hmm.
Then we jump back to the Proton set. We have Buster Kincaid and Captain Proton walking along, and Lonzak appears with two henchmen. Mm-hmm. Paris does not have time for this because we're trying to figure out what's going on. So
he literally goes, I don't have time for this,
and shoots Lonzak.
He just pulls out his laser gun. I'm going to call it a laser gun.
Laser gun. Ray gun.
His ray gun. There he goes. Pulls out his ray gun. He's like, I don't have time for this. Pulls out his ray gun, shoots one of them.
Right. But Lonzak has such an amazing monologue in the beginning, and he's doing a great job with that. Yeah. I escaped and I can't wait for the day to have revenge against you. And you shoot him. Right.
Yeah. He's got his big dramatic thing. I'm like, I don't have time.
The henchmen are shocked. Even the henchmen are like, wait a minute. Like, he's not done with his monologue. And then, of course, Harry pulls out his ray gun and shoots one of the other henchmen while Tom takes out the other henchman. You saw my little thing that I added in, right?
The little extra shot.
Yeah. Not only the little extra shot, but.
Oh, blows the smoke.
The blowing of the fictitious smoke. There's no smoke, but no, I remember, okay, I'm going to kind of twirl my little ray gun. I'm going to blow away the smoke. And let's just see what Alan says about that. Cause I didn't tell him I was going to do it beforehand. And then when he said cut, he came over, he's like, nice touch. He actually liked it. I was like, okay, good. Funny. So you're not going to make me do this again? He's like, nope. I think it's great. I'm like, all right. Love you, Alan. So we kept that in.
But it totally fits. That's what's so fun about this episode and mm-hmm. this holiday program is all of that kind of fun, silly stuff can work. It can fit.
Yes. And the extra shot was very funny too. And it's also notable that, these ray guns, you need multiple shots to really take somebody out.
Yeah,
it's like a slow stun. It's like the first one like stings a little and second one.
And everybody has a very dramatic death from all of them. It's always a fun death to watch.
Most definitely.
Okay. We go back to the bridge.
Yep.
There's a layer of subspace we realize that's disrupting our warp field.
Yeah.
We try impulse.
Yeah.
And nope, that doesn't work.
Well, we try full thrusters, actually. Full impulse and nothing.
Yeah.
And in fact, it's about to overload. So we've basically entered a layer of subspace. So we're kind of half in subspace, half in regular space is what I understood from that conversation.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
We go back to the holodeck. We're on the Captain Proton's rocket ship bridge.
Mm-hmm.
And Paris can't disengage the program. I love that we're using this periscope viewer to look outside. When we use this periscope, we see another distortion appear and a third.
Right.
And light energies are still there and starting to multiply.
Mm-hmm.
And so Paris comes up with a site-to-site transport that we're going to get out of the... We can't shut the program down.
But he has access to transporters.
Has access to transporters. So we'll do the site-to-site transport. We end up in the hallway.
Yeah.
We appear in the hall.
But I noticed... We appeared in the exact same position we were in when you did the site-to-site beaming, because you're hunched over, turned away from me.
And you're I'm still looking at the periscope.
Exactly, in that motion. And we don't do that enough. Because if you recall from the prior episode, from a prior episode counterpoint, when we beamed in Paris's alien salamander cousin, Tarot, from his ship, the guy with the nose thing, he was sitting down. He was sitting down. Remember, he was looking back at us from his view screen point, and he was sitting down. But when we beam him aboard, he's standing up. He's not in reality. He should have been in a seated position and then fall to the ground. But we don't really. It's not consistent.
We don't do it enough.
No,
yes, we should make sure that we always do that.
I agree.
Although it's too late because we filmed these episodes 25 years ago. So there's nothing we can do about it now.
Exactly.
It's done. But in the future, when we make more Voyager episodes,
of course,
we will correct
Yes. We'll stay consistent. All right.
We go to Astrometrics now. Janeway, Paris, Seven is there. B'Elanna's there. B'Elanna says, basically, she describes what this subspace thing we're stuck in. She says, we're basically like stuck on a subspace sandbar.
Right.
And it's causing a loss of control of all these systems. Yeah.
My note was, when she says we've run aground on a subspace sandbar, I started saying Paris is really influencing Torres, because typically Torres doesn't talk in layman's terms.
Yeah.
She's very technical. But all of a sudden she's almost spouting, you know, she's talking as if Tom is talking.
That's how you would say that. Made it simple for anybody can understand.
Like,
That's a good point. Mm-hmm. That's a good point.
Mm-hmm. It shows the how well you guys are in sync now. That's what I saw from that.
Yeah. We learned that our computer's offline, tactical holodecks, everything. Yeah. We can't control. There's no access to any of this stuff.
Nothing.
And Janeway is trying to figure out what to do. She talks about an experience she had on the Albatani.
Yes, and you do remember the last time we hear about the Albatani.
When did we hear about that?
The pilot episode, when you were walking with Janeway in the New Zealand penal colony. She's talking about, like, you know, I served with your father on the Albatani. Like, that was the last time we heard about it from Caretaker when she was a science officer. And now they bring it back up again, which is cool, right?
Very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, so she's explaining... Basically, Janeway's heading to the point she's going to make where maybe if we turn off all our systems and we can kind of sneak out of here. And she's getting to her point. B'Elanna's starting to agree with her and letting her finish. And then Seven just interrupts her. It's like, here's what we should do.
Yes.
And Janeway's response is, you took the words right out of my mouth. It made me laugh. Yeah.
And then Torres goes, and now that we have your permission or something along those lines, I guess we're good to go. So everyone is kind of very tongue in cheek and playing with Seven in a way, you know, and her bluntness, how blunt she is. So essentially their idea is if that our own warp field may be the problem, why the gravimetric forces are happening, we need to shut down the warp core, shut it down and just use minimal thrusters and maybe we'll break free. So that's the strategy.
So next we go to the holodeck again and we see these colorful light that we saw inside the cave system before. Now the light starts forming into, I would describe it as like men in black with fedoras on. They look kind of like either gangsters or it's the photonic aliens taking on a holodeck character.
Right. Taking on a holodeck form. And so they materialize in these bodies with their suits and very men in black looking and their hats.
Great faces. Fedoras. They look so perfectly cast.
The makeup that was done on the lead guy's
face. It was almost
face.
Like it was white. It was like extra pale or something.
Yeah,
like.
It was sort of like Bela Lugosi, you know, it was very, very specific makeup that was given to them,
which
kind of was right on. It was right on the money because it made us all feel like, okay, these are aliens trying to manifest in the human forms of the characters in this holodeck program. Yeah. And it's a little bit off, you know what I'm saying? They're not exactly on. The makeup makes them look quite gaunt and pale and this and that. So very good job, I think.
Yeah, they were great. They appear and they run into Lonsat here. He says, lower the drawbridge. He calls back on the communicator watch, which I loved, by the way. It was like a big, it looked like a miniature version of the kind of speakers you put in a drive-in movie theater back in the day that you would hang in the window, those big metal speakers.
Yes.
So he was wearing one of those on his wrist.
Every millennial listening to this is like, what?
What's a drive-in about? Movie
What is
theater?
A drive-in theater?
Just Google it. Just Google it.
You'll know. But what's important is, the aliens say to Lonsak, we intend no harm. Like they're not here to conquer anybody at all. And of course, Lonsak arrests them and man has his two henchmen manhandle them.
Yeah.
And takes them
I
to
love the henchmen, by the way. They have sort of these like almost like what do you call them? Like ski masks or something underneath their helmets. It was awesome. It was a great,
again, another amazing touch, you know, put in there by the wardrobe department.
Yeah.
All right. So now we are at Chaotica's Fortress of Doom.
Yes.
Lonsak brings in the prisoners who claim to be from another dimension, the fifth dimension.
Well, first he doesn't bring the prisoners in. He just comes in by himself.
Oh, right.
And Chaotica's like, where's Proton?
Yeah.
He's up. Yeah. And he's like, where's Proton? Lonsak has failed basically.
Mm-hmm.
And the robot starts to, he's like, you know, arrest him or, you know, lock him up or something. And the robot starts to come over.
Mm-hmm.
And then he says, no, I've got prisoners.
Right.
And Chaotica says, wait, more Earthlings. And he says, Lonsak says, no, they claim to be from the fifth, from another dimension.
He says another dimension. Yes.
Yeah. Chaotica like, says, wait a minute. They're from the fifth dimension.
Yes.
And he says, bring them in. And so Lonsak claps his hands like a clap on, clap off lights.
Yes.
I love that they're just waiting outside. And when Lonsak's like, he claps and the door opens up.
Royal wipers? That's all I can think about. All right.
He claps open the doors. I love it.
This is the force to the knees scene right here. Chaotica asks, why have they invaded his planet? And they come up with, to contact other photonic life forms, to learn from
them. They're explorers.
They are explorers. They are the photonic version of Starfleet, is what I wrote down.
Yes, totally.
Chaotica says, no, you're a vanguard of an invading army. And like, no, we're explorers. And the aliens say that this contact must be terminated because Chaotica is hostile. Chaotica orders Lonsak to execute them. Lonsak does shoot and I'm assuming vaporizes one of them, right? That's the, he's gone for good. And that is when the other, does he have a name? The lead?
No.
Does he even have it? No, he doesn't even have a name. Okay.
He's just a photonic alien.
He's just a photonic alien and he punches a few buttons and beams himself out of there.
But before this, Chaotica says something about, oh, you're from the fifth dimension. Well, you're no match for my space force.
Right.
And I went, oh, the Space Force. This was the original Space Force.
Here
you
go.
Here we go. It was a Steve Carell show and it was reality. It's Space Force
started
has become,
here.
Yes. It all started with Dr. Chaotica and his Space Force.
Good call.
So he shoots one of them. The other one escapes with his some kind of beam device.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, power the death ray. He wants Arachnia to join him and rain destruction down on the fifth dimension.
Yeah, so he orders the robot, Satan's robot, to take Constance Goodheart to Arachnia, I guess as a sort of like a, here, this is my goodwill gesture, have this prisoner, and I want to invite you to join me in my battle against the fifth dimension. So that's what that was.
And then Constance screams. For the 200th time so far.
She even screams when the photonic alien dies. I'm like, wait a minute, this is not even danger to you at all. Like, what, you're screaming here too.
That's amazing. Mm-hmm. It's just she's a one note kind of character, but she delivers every time.
Yes.
With the screams, the crazy scream.
Yep.
Anyway, we have a captain's log here where Janeway says we learn that we've been stuck here and we've been spinning our wheels for 3 days. She says,
which by the way, that 3 days is the same amount of time that they were spinning their wheels on the Albatani. She was talking about how it took 3 days to get rid of that dense, to get out of that dense proto nebula. And then we have another 3 days here. So
three days. Mm-hmm. I love this next scene in the mess hall.
Neelix
has a joke at the top where he's talking to Tarek, mm-hmm. who's also our robot in the robot outfit. He's talking to Tarek and he's giving him some kind of like seaweed food or something.
Something very unappetizing looking.
Something unappetizing. And the and as we come in from that captain's log, Neelix says to Tarek, he goes, "Well, look on the bright side. There's only three meals a day." And he gives him a big smile. And I thought, I wondered if he added that.
Because, you think so?
Maybe. Well, I texted him. I texted Ethan Phillips.
And I
sent a little clip of that. And I said, "Did you add this or was this in the script?" Yeah. And he texted back right away. He said, "No, I added that." Absolutely.
Nice. I love it. He got away with one.
He got a little joke in there and it totally fit this episode, of the episode.
It did. There's only four functioning lavatories on a ship for 150. Oh my God.
Yes.
But before that, Janeway needs coffee.
Before that, Janeway yes. steps over and says, and Neelix is like, "Hey, what can I get you?" And she says, "Coffee." And he says, he starts talking. And she comes over and like basically puts her hand up and on him and says, no, stop.
Yeah.
Coffee. I want coffee.
Yeah.
Hot coffee, black.
Yeah.
And so then he walks across the mess hall to a replicator and orders coffee, black. I thought to myself, why didn't
she
just
do that?
Walk in the door and go to the replicator? Why did she have to go to him, order it again? But it's a funny bit.
Yeah.
Then he hands her the black coffee and he starts to talk and she goes, no, coffee first.
Yeah.
And so he stops and she's drinking her coffee and enjoying coffee. Like I've never seen anyone enjoy coffee. It's so good. And you see him like, he's nervous. He's like kind of awkwardly silently standing. It was funny. It was just the whole coffee bit that they ordered. She wanted coffee like three or four times. She kept saying coffee, coffee, coffee.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay, now they talk about the bathroom.
Now they talk about four functioning lavatories for a ship of 150 people. Evidently, that's how many people we have left.
Yep.
We had 170 or something, right? Or 200 or whatever.
I feel now, like the numbers.
We've been whittling away. So.
I feel like he's ballparking this.
Okay, he might have ballparked that. And Janeway's just like, you know what? I'm just going to leave it in your capable hands. I'm sure you'll make the right decision. I need to go. And she gets out of there. And the best part of this scene is, and I'm sure this is his ad lib physicality, he looks down at her cup, picks it up, and just drinks the rest of it. And it's either A, he's thinking, we can't waste the replicator rations like that, or B, it's just, that's just Ethan Phillips being Ethan Phillips with his very funny physicality.
It was
drinking
very funny.
Her coffee. Yeah.
Very funny. So I think we go to the bridge now.
Yes, we're on the bridge.
And we're going to start to get out of here slowly. So we're going like, 5 meters per second, 3 meters per second, 5 meters. Yep. We start moving a little bit and it seems to be working, this plan. And then all of a sudden we start slowing down again.
Right.
And B'Elanna reads a power surge with a weapon signature.
And an unknown source.
An unknown source. So Tuvok does a scan and he locates the source of the weapon signature. It's basically the holodeck is what he says, whatever deck it's on. Mm-hmm. Says there's no life signs there though. There's weapon signature, but no life signs. And Janeway says, "Tuvok, go check it out. Mr. Paris, join him." Mm-hmm. And so we go back to the fortress.
Yeah.
And there's Tuvok and Paris back outside the fortress, but it looks like a battle took place here. Mm-hmm. And also we say in the scene that holodecks don't normally run themselves. That they don't run by themselves. So why is this still running? Why are the henchmen and Constance dead on the ground?
Mm-hmm.
Paris says she's one of the good guys. Like good guys never get killed in old Hollywood movies. The good guys always won, right? That was the cliche. So
I just want to address the image of you when you guys are on the inside the holodeck program, you look up at the Fortress of Doom and there's clearly it's one of the towers is smoking and damaged. And I was thinking after, after watching this whole thing, I was thinking, how's that possible? The lightning shield would have stopped that. You know what I'm saying? So how was that damage even happening? That was kind of like, continuity. Yeah, the old lightning shield should have been up because it's never down, clearly. Mm-hmm. So his entire palace, the entire fortress should have been protected. So,
yes, but we all know how a lightning shield works.
Yes, we do. So I guess that was a little bit of an undersight there. They should have maybe not had that damage going on there.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Mm-hmm. Satan's robot appears.
They find Satan's robot, and Paris says, I'm gonna fix this guy up, repair his vocalizer. and he finds a burned out resistor, and Tuvok says, a what? and Paris explains, well, this is, you know, circuitry before neutronic circuitry. They use resistors and tubes. He pulls out a tube, hands it to Tuvok. His look was very funny. Paris fixes the wires and tries to turn him on, and then he slams the body of the robot, and then the robot works. Classic old school, if it's not working, just hit it. And
just hit it. The robot then says that basically the invaders from the fifth dimension came through the portal, and this battle has ensued. Paris asks the robot to show Tuvok and himself where the portal is, and they arrive. They see that same energy anomaly that Harry and Tom saw earlier, but now out of these little anomalies or these portals come these photonic charges. They're getting shot at. Paris and Tuvok take cover, and Paris basically says that he needs to head to his rocket ship because there are sensors aboard that he can utilize to determine what's been going on here. So they leave. Paris, Tuvok, and Satan's robot leave for the rocket ship.
And I love when they leave and Satan's robot runs. His run was very funny. And I had a flashback when I saw him running to when I was like 4 years old. I was a robot for Halloween.
Oh.
And we made my costume out of cardboard boxes. And I remember when I was running one time from one house to another, I tripped and fell. And I couldn't get up because it was all cardboard boxes. It's like once you're down,
you're down.
And I was traumatized as a four-year-old stuck on the ground in my robot outfit.
I'm sorry to laugh at your trauma. It's just the images.
When I saw Tark running, when I saw the robot running, I was like petrified. I'm like, don't fall. You'll never get up. But anyway.
I just love that. Like me seeing that scene, I'm like, all right, cool scene. And you're watching that scene going, no.
I was having a whole childhood flashback.
It all came back to you. Your PTSD from falling and not getting up with that cardboard costume. That's right. Interesting. You were a robot.
I was a robot when I was 4 years old. Yeah.
Oh, my God. Very cool. Yeah. Okay.
And we covered it in tinfoil. We took cardboard boxes
and
covered them in tinfoil so it looked like metal robot.
Is there a photo of that exists?
I don't know. I don't think so. I've
ask your sister
for one.
Ask your sister if she has something like
She may have some photos.
That would that would be amazing. All right, where are we now?
Astrometrics. Yes, and Seven
and Harry.
She establishes a visual link with a holodeck.
Yeah,
and we see these lights firing, and it appears that this attack is coming from subspace.
That's right.
And then there's some lightning that strikes. Mm-hmm. And Harry's like, that's Chaotica's death ray. He recognizes that. That's the kid. Yeah. Wait a minute. What's happening?
Yeah.
So Harry pulls up the fortress.
The visual link for the fortress.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there's Martin Rayner being very dramatic, talking about full power to the death ray.
Yeah.
And so Seven is not having this dramatic audio in the background, so she turns the sound off.
She did. Well, he's calling to Arachnia as well, right, in this scene.
Yeah, he's calling to Arachnia, but I love on the big astrometric screen, she's like, audio computer, audio off. And you see Martin Rayner like dramatically, you know, talking behind her, and she's She's in the foreground, just dryly talking about, you know, business.
Yeah. And I wrote classic down what comedy. She said, the little dialogue between Seven and Harry. She says, "It seems your infantile scenario now poses a security risk." And then Harry says, "It's just supposed to be a little harmless entertainment." And Seven replies, "Entertainment, another frivolous human endeavor." And then I laugh in the background. Did you see my face? I'm like, I'm laughing.
Oh, that's funny.
Actually. Yes. And that's one thing that I noted in a lot of these scenes. There's a lot of like laughter going on with everyone around, especially in the briefing
room
later.
Everybody had fun. Everybody had fun making this episode.
It was a fun episode.
Really fun episode. Yeah. So now we go back to Captain Proton's ship and there's Paris pulling out a telegram message. From would you the call president.
That, what would you call that? Would you call that a ticker tape? Is that what
it's like
called?
A ticker tape. Yeah, perfect.
Okay.
Yeah, the ticker tape's kind of coming out. You see this glass covered old machine with wheels turning in the ticker tape. But did you notice the ticker tape wasn't coming out of the machine? And I remember this. They had sort of faked it. They had faked it on the front side so that I could just pull it out, but it wasn't really
Coming out of it.
Coming
then.
Out of
okay.
the machine.
Okay.
But anyway, we do get this message from the president of Earth. He's intercepted communications between Chaotica and Arachnia.
Yes.
And Chaotica's at war with aliens from the fifth dimension. So we're picking all this up. We're getting caught up by this ticker tape telegram.
Yeah. And I love how you're reading it like in the old days. Stop. Stop. And then Tuvok's like, stop.
Stop.
He says stop too. He can't take it any longer. Just summarize it, will you? I love that a little bit.
There was a little continuity in the edit, a continuity thing. Because when Paris stands up in the close-up, when I stood up and was talking to Tuvok, I was standing up facing him and I even put one of my hands on my hip to talk to him. But when it cut back to the two shot, I was still leaning down.
Oh, you were still leaning down.
I was I hate when that happens.
Yeah,
I hate when those little continuity errors happen. But
you caught one there.
Yeah.
I think this is when you get interrupted by the main photonic alien, right? You guys hear a little sound coming from the door, the hatch.
Oh, we hear. That's right.
Yeah. And then
the robot says, invaders, invaders.
Right. And Tuvok makes a comment like there's no security. Like anyone can just walk into the ship. And you're like, these are different times or something like that. Yeah. Is what you said. And the main photonic alien comes in. He informs you that 53 of his people have been killed. And Paris is like, we didn't kill anybody. Paris and Tuvok try their hardest to explain that Proton is a simulation. He then scans Tuvok and Paris, who do not register as life forms on his tech. So you guys are the simulation to him. He's thinking you guys aren't even real.
Yeah, you don't show up as photonic energy, so you must not be real.
Yes,
exactly. And he explains that we are, call us?
Carbon-based life forms.
Carbon-based life forms. Mm-hmm. But I want to go back just as they were coming in the door. And Paris and Tuvok and the robot are there. And the robot says, invaders, intruders, intruders, or invaders, invaders. And then Paris is like, quiet. And he keeps saying, invaders, invaders. And Paris hits him. Do you remember that?
Yes.
I hit the robot in the face.
Yes.
And he sort of mumbles, invaders.
No, he totally gets small with it. Yes. That's in my video reaction, actually.
But I remember when I hit that thing, there was a mesh screen up
you
here.
Dented it.
I did. I dented.
You sure
it.
Did dent it. You dented Satan's robot.
I remember
robot,
they had to fix it. I remember it was like, oops, I hit it right in the eye socket part. Oopsie. Yeah. And they had to take the whole thing off and they had to refix it. And Tarek was sitting there like, I can't see out of it. So that was a whole thing.
Oh my gosh.
I love the robot's line. He's going, damage, require maintenance, help. And he's just standing there,
walk away from him.
And Paris and Tuvok both sort of dryly, just disgusted stare. And then I just walk away, which
you
I thought it was funny.
How mean of you. Yeah. And that happened because the robot tried to attack the photonic alien and he stuns him. Now, by the way, look how advanced these guys are. Their tricorder and their phaser are all in one unit. Why couldn't Starfleet have come up with this type of invention? Goodness gracious.
Well, I think that what that says is that in the future, our smartphones are going to have a phaser built into them too. That it's going to be a smartphone
Are you trying to say the iPhone 300 is going to have a phaser attachment to it?
It will
and
have
a tricorder too?
Yep,
okay, stun feature? That's amazing.
All in one.
That's super cool.
Yeah. We go to the briefing room, and this was one of my favorite scenes in the episode. I love this scene. And partially why I loved it was because Alan Craker did a phenomenal job, just like in our last episode. I think I was talking about Mike Vahar, how he staged scenes where the blocking just folded into beautifully choreographed shots and scenes.
Aren't you sitting on the table in this one?
I'm sitting on the table. So it starts with Janeway saying, you know, she's basically saying, okay, so let me get this straight. She's
trans-dimensional aliens have mistaken your Captain Proton simulation for reality. And now an armed conflict has broken out between these aliens and Chaotica's holographic army. Yes, that's what she says. So go ahead with the staging.
Yeah, she comes around and she's asking, is this what do I understand this right? And Paris is like, yep.
Yes, ma'am.
Forget the line.
His army. This is what you say. You go, yes, ma'am. His army of evil. Like, this is what you say.
It's army of evil. It was just, I was very proud of my delivery.
You did.
And I could see Robert and Jerry Ryan in the background look at each other. They almost lost it.
No, they're trying not to laugh. They're trying. But they are smiling.
To try to get them to laugh. And I almost got him on that first line.
Well, he does smile. He does smile. You could, if you look at, in the first line, you don't get him. But later, when you talk about the death ray, you do see Chakotay smiling in the background. Yeah. And even Janeway is smiling throughout this scene, which is rare. You don't see this kind of.
For me, what I loved about the comedy of this is that Paris was the only one in the room who's like, yeah, this is absolutely,
you're completely serious.
Yeah, this is, there's nothing funny about this.
Yeah, there's not funny to you
it's
at all.
Army of evil. Yeah. It's Queen Arachnia, Queen of the Spider People. Yeah. It was so, he was so like just matter of fact.
Yes.
Absolutely. And they're like, what? It's called a what? Yeah. Which, by the way, for Star Trek fans, like, I'm sure. Star Trek people have tried to explain to non-Star Trek people, like, so there's a starship, and it's part of this thing, Starfleet,
right?
And you know, you're just explaining it, and they go warp, thing go warp, you know, warp 1, 2, 3, whatever. They have phasers, and you know, there's Klingons who, I'm sure, you know, to non-Star Trek people, they listen to us talk or whatever. And they're like, what?
Yeah, it's the same reaction as the crew to your story about Captain Proton. Basically.
That's what I love about this whole thing. That's why there needs to be more Captain
Proton. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And Tuvok is so tongue-in-cheek when he goes, like, it's a shame we don't have a death ray. Chakotay, that's when he laughs in the background.
Yeah.
But the plan is for Arachnia to disable the lightning shield from inside the Fortress of Doom. Mm-hmm. And then the destructo beam on Captain Proton's rocket ship will then disable the death ray. That's the plan. Mm-hmm. And then we have to figure out, you know, Janeway's like, well, somebody's got to play Arachnia. And she looks towards Seven of Nine.
Yes.
And I kept thinking, I started thinking, oh my gosh, I bet you the audience was thinking, oh my God, Seven of Nine is going to be Arachnia. And then it's flipped. And then I started thinking, that would not have worked as well at all with Jerry Ryan as Arachnia. It had to be Kate on this one.
Yes. Oh,
and now you throw in there a reference to actors that was written
the
in
role
there.
Of a lifetime.
The role of a lifetime.
It's exactly. Captain, it's the role of a lifetime.
Oh my God.
She thinks about it. She's kind of coy. I love her. She goes, okay, all right. I'm a size 4.
Yes. The I'm a size 4 dialogue written by Brian and Michael Taylor. Perfect. Perfect.
Yeah, really funny. Mm-hmm. So she's going to go in there and play along. We go to sick bay. B'Elanna comes in, the doctor's called her. He's very excited because he says he's been enlisted into this holodeck mission.
Undercover.
And he's going to go undercover. Mm-hmm. And we hear he's going to be portraying the president of Earth. And he needs some new clothing parameters. So he's having her
adjust that for
adjust
him.
Adjust that. And she also does an actor thing. She says, break a leg.
Yes.
It's all a big performance.
Yeah, the origin is from Victorian times of that phrase, you know, break a leg. Yeah, it is.
And I love that it's you know, for B'Elanna,
this
character is not an actor or...
And
she's also way in the future from this
scene
to be able to whip this out and go, hey, doc, break a leg.
But it's again, I wrote that up to Paris Torres relationship. This is the PT thing going on here. Yeah. You know, she's used to Tom Paris's sort of love of ancient or not ancient 20th century conversation types of subject matter. So I thought it was good. I loved it.
It was great.
Yeah.
We go to a hallway scene. Paris is walking with Janeway and he's filling her in on a number of different sections of the hall. We keep jumping.
Yeah. Did you write down continuity issue on this one?
No, I didn't.
Okay. What it was is we talk about the briefing room that her job is to disable the lightning shield, but in the hallway, then she's talking about, oh, all I have to do is find the controls to the death ray and disable it. So it's like, wait a minute, you guys are talking about the death ray disabling it? Because that's protons. You're supposed to fire your destructo beam to disable the death ray. Her job
is to do the lightning shield.
But yet in the hallway, she's talking to you about, oh, so my job is to disable the death ray. So I felt like, how did no one catch that?
Yeah,
that's a little. But the dialogue afterwards, wonderful between you and Janeway.
I love this. I didn't write down any of the dialogue because it's all gold.
Okay. So because you're talking about how, because Chaotica is a megalomaniac, it's a good idea to appeal to his ego. Use grandiose language. He likes to be called sire. And it helps to say things like, the clever fiendishness of your evil plan is brilliant. And remember, ray gun, not phaser, imagizer, not view screen, and earthlings, not Terrans, and then uncork the pheromones as a last resort. And then when you yell at her, you're like, I'll see you at the Fortress of Doom, and remember, you're the queen. All I can think of, do you remember that scene in Princess Bride when they're leaving Miracle Max, and it's Billy Crystal and Carol Kane. Carol Kane says, bye bye, boys, and then Billy Crystal says, have fun storming the castle, and then that's exactly how I felt. When you kind of send Janeway off on her mission.
Oh, that's funny. I don't think I was thinking of that when I did it, but it was such a fun scene. I vividly remember this scene. We had to do it a lot because as you recall, in the hallway, it was all about timing.
Yes.
You know, you'd round a corner, start the dialogue, and you'd have to finish it precisely at a certain point for the shot to work.
Yeah.
So I remember we had to do these scenes, these sections a lot.
Yeah.
And it was always fun. I remember this. I remember there were a lot of words because it was all me basically. Like it was a long monologue with her
nodding the whole time. Yeah.
It was, most of it was
you
me.
Carried so that scene. Yes.
I remember it just being so much fun. And even though we had to do it over and over, I was having so much fun doing it and playing and trying to get her to laugh and get a reaction out of her that I had a blast doing it. So,
but you know, over two decades later, I'm still smiling ear to ear, listening about how excited and how much fun you had filming this scene.
Yeah.
It was great.
It was really, really fun.
I cannot get enough of it. Okay.
We do go to next to the Fortress of Doom.
Yes.
And Dr. Chaotica is about to fire the death ray. He's getting it all ready to go. And then he's going to make an announcement to the citizens of the fifth dimension. And I love how he takes the microphone and he takes the cord and he whips it.
And you hear the whip sound too.
Yeah, they
right?
put they it put in a they put it in a whoop, which That's later awesome. On which later on Janeway does the same move, which I love.
Yes,
it made
she
me
does
laugh.
Do that. But again, this is something that I never thought they would include into an episode of Voyager, you know, these type of very campy kind of things, but you can do it with Captain Proton. It works here. You can get away with it. Exactly. And this is the introduction of Arachnia, right? Because he says, on the little microphone, he says, you must surrender, fifth dimension. And then you hear a little, like someone is responding and he's like, oh, is this their surrender? And no, it is Arachnia.
She wants to see him.
Yes.
And she enters. And there's this beautiful shot pushing into Kate, and she poses like a 1940s movie Hollywood star.
Yeah.
And you cut back to Martin Rayner, Chaotica, and he shivers.
I was there when they filmed this shot when she came in. Okay. And I'm not even in the scene, but I was there to watch this. And when they called Kate on set, she was in character. She did not walk on like Kate Mulgrew. She walked on like Arachnia with this complete air of grandeur. And it was she strolled on like royalty. It was the funniest thing I've ever seen. I just remember the entire crew.
So
and myself watching Kate, and we were all going, we were mesmerized by this. It was the best. Loved it.
It was really good.
Yeah.
she does start talking to him. He asks why she's here, and and she uses one of the lines that Paris had recommended. She says, "I've always admired your clever fiendishness." I laugh, and he's touched and overwhelmed. He kisses her hand.
Yeah.
And then she moves over. She says, "Is this the death ray? Is this your death ray?" And he goes, "No, that's cradle." Yeah. Cradle of Persuasion.
Yes.
And this is the brain probe. I love all the description of these props and tools.
Oh my goodness.
Looking around at all the amazing props and things.
Mm-hmm.
And she finds, she goes up to the throne.
Yes.
She wants to see his throne. And then she sees the pheromones. And
she's
like, you've still got this.
Yes.
And he walks away.
And she steals it.
She steals it. Yeah. She sticks it in her sleeve.
Okay. So when she steals it, did you notice the close-up on her fingers?
No.
Okay. She has the black nails to match, and they match Martin. I didn't even know Martin Rayner has black nail polish as well. But if you look at her nails, like the standard nail, then beyond the nail, there was an additional added piece of black nail that went on her finger. So it was a very elaborate nail job that was done with this extra part that goes that rides up her finger towards her knuckle. It was so, I was like, what? I don't remember seeing that. Yeah, the detailing was just, no stone was left unturned by makeup, wardrobe, set design. They went all out.
And another thing I noticed later on, there's a 50-50 shot, face-to-face shot of Martin Rayner and Kate Mulgrew.
Yeah.
And I know that Martin's a shorter man.
Right.
And I do remember that they wanted Kate in heels, a bit of heels, and that was going to raise her up. So they wanted Martin to not be
drastically shorter than her.
Drastically shorter, vertically challenged.
Right.
So they put him in these amazing platform shoes. But you don't really see them.
I remember those shoes now. Yeah, they were like Kiss, the rock band, big, with their shoes.
Big,
massive.
Big high shoes.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes back to your nail comment. There are so many details. No stone is left unturned. They thought about that ahead of time.
Yeah.
Got his height up. It also was just a great shoe for his character. Oh, you don't really see it, but it was great. So she takes the pheromones, and I made another note here about the score. The score in the scene was phenomenal.
So good.
She does make up a story about she wants him to turn off the lightning shield, and he's like, why are you so interested in this? And she talks about her spider ships are arriving to join in the fight, and that she wants him to turn off the lightning shield so her spider ships can come and help them.
And that there, and so she says, turn it off so that my spider ships and my soldiers can pay tribute to you.
Pay tribute.
That's how, because he kept saying, well, just send your ships into the fight. You know, they don't have to come here. So she's trying every single way. But I do love when she sits on his throne and she says, somehow I feel very comfortable here. Like it's the captain's chair, right?
Yes.
So funny. Oh my gosh.
He does say he's reluctant to lower these shields, but she could prove her loyalty by becoming his queen, by marrying him.
Yeah.
And she agrees and she says, but I want my fleet to come and witness this event.
Yeah.
And so she's trying every way to turn off the lightning shield.
Yeah. Because there's even that part when she goes, and don't forget about the lightning shield. She keeps saying, she still throws that out there. But he says, ready to have the marriage now, immediately.
He's ready
the
to
ceremony.
Have it now. Yeah. And he says, I'll turn it off and let your ships come when they arrive on the wedding day.
Yeah.
The day, and he says, the day you become Bride of Chaotica. It was amazing.
It was
amazing. We go back out to the rocks area. We're still in the black and white world. Mm-hmm. This is the point where I was like, wow, we've been in this black and white world a lot in this episode.
Right. And now we see the doctor.
We see some footsteps. We reveal it's the doctor. He is scanned. He's the president of Earth. He's got a big patch here that says the president of Earth.
And they gave him glasses too. So which was interesting.
But he's scanned by one of the photonic aliens.
Well, actually, before he does, what how we should talk about that. He has the one device, the alien device, yes, that Satan's robot had knocked out of the main mm-hmm. photonic alien's hand earlier. So now he uses that to sort of call or bring the alien through the threshold. So he sort of beams the alien
right.
in.
Beams him in.
Yeah. And that's when he scans the doctor and realizes, mm-hmm. hey, you're alive like me. Mm-hmm. Yep. You're a photonic.
You're a photonic creature just like
being me. Like I am. Mm-hmm.
And the doctor shares with him the fact, and we all know that this is a fact, that the only person that can possibly save them all is Captain Proton.
Yeah,
he's amazing.
He's and the defender of the universe, the scourge. Oh, that was the best line. He goes, defender of the universe, scourge of intergalactic evil, and a competent medic to boot. But don't say I said so. So that was a very tongue-in-cheek funny. Little addition there.
Yes.
I wonder if he, I think that was written in. I don't think he added
that. That had to be written in because, yeah. Oh, the medic part? Or
yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure that was written in.
Yeah.
I'm sure that was written in.
Yeah, I do.
So the doctor says, you know, if you let Captain Proton save, he'll defeat Chaotica, and then you can leave safely with confidence that these guys are,
right. You know, but the main point is that he asked them to stop firing because the firing of their photonic weapons is causing us to get deeper and deeper in this subspace sandbar. So and the guys agree. I mean, he's like, OK, yeah.
He's a good guy. He's a good guy. This photonic alien.
Yes, he is.
We go back to the Proton ship and Harry and Paris are working on the bridge. Paris even says at this point, he's like, when this is all over, I'm deleting this whole program. Like,
I
this
know thing is a mess. He's going to shut down the program. He's going to retire his rocket pack. But I love the introductory shot is basically, it's like a ballet. I mean, it's just like that blocking of the beginning. And Harry ducks underneath the robot's arms and goes you have to duck under his other arm coming around. So it was a nice little dance blocking in the beginning there.
Mm-hmm. It was great. Mm-hmm. Then the doctor arrives under the Proton's bridge. He says something about, this feels pretty good. I feel like I want to run for office when this is all over. This feels right to me to be president of Earth.
Right.
Which I thought was very funny. We go inside the Castle of Doom and there's a wedding ring that Janeway thinks is for her, for Arachnia, but no.
It's for him.
It's for him. She's told, you will present this to Chaotica at the wedding.
They detect Proton ship coming in, so they start fire. They're going to fire the death ray at the ship. Yep. That's when Janeway walks over to the one henchman who's about to fire the death ray, and she does a little karate chop to the back
karate
of his
chop,
head, which knocks him out. Right?
Yes.
And then Janeway grabs the ray gun and starts aiming it at Chaotica and Lonzak, and that's when Chaotica says, you know, take her out. And he fires at her. And of course that does nothing to her at all. She laughs. Then he says the confinement rings and he calls her an impetuous harlot the phrase that he uses. But did you notice when he says confinement rings, then they cut back to a shot of the two of it's basically Lonzak. Chaotica and Lonzak. Yes. But it's a little continuity error because he's moving to touch his button before he says confinement rings. And that's what I call. Yeah. So it's sort of like, oh, you sort of anticipated a little bit. Yeah. That was my only issue.
But I love he's got the button on his belt.
Yeah.
And that activates these rings, which is basically a force field around her. She's trapped. And
she's
then trapped. They do activate the weapon to fire at Captain Proton's ship. We go onto the ships and then Paris tells the doctor to activate the destructo beam. And the doctor's like, what's that? He goes, the big
button in the middle of the panel.
Yeah.
He goes,
the big button in the middle of the panel.
Yeah.
So the doctor starts to go over to push a button and both Harry and Tom in unison go, the other panel.
Yeah. The other panel. We scream it. Like, I want to know what that other button that he almost pushed does. I'm curious. Exactly. What was that? Maybe that's the one where we eject out of the ship or something
maybe,
like that.
Yeah.
I don't know. But that was very funny. The other panel! We scream at him.
Yeah. And we go to the bridge. We are getting pulled deeper into subspace still at this point. We go back
because
to
of the fire, the alien weapons.
Yeah.
Really, Chaotica's weapon firing at
the
Proton
photonic
ship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The doctor says, incoming here. We go back to the fortress. Janeway is opening up her pheromones at this point.
Yes.
She's chained to the wall.
Right.
She's not in the energy.
But, I mean, but her purpose was to sort of release these pheromones so that Chaotica is affected.
Yes.
But Chaotica leaves the scene, or he moves further away. And Lonzak replaces him. And he's the one that starts smelling the pheromones. And
Lonzak, he's like sniffing and it cuts back to her. And then he's sniffing some more and he starts walking towards her.
Yeah.
He's slowly walking and sniffing and smelling, and he's under her spell.
He is.
And he says, "Your beauty is maddening. Entangle me in your web," he says, which I love.
Yes, yes.
And she says, "Free me," and which he does. And then she fires the ray gun at the minions. And now she's got the ray gun up. She tells Chaotica to lower his shields.
Yes,
his lightning shield, which he does. She shoots him, and he bounces. The way that he bounces around. And finally falls, the most dramatic death I've ever seen in my life.
Now, when he deactivates the shield, did you notice anything with that sound effect?
No.
I'm pretty sure it is the sound effect from the old Pac-Man game. Because it goes, boop, 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 boop.
Oh, that's
like funny. That's what when you lose it, when you get, you know, eaten by the little things that are chasing you in Pac-Man, when your Pac-Man falls down to nothing, it goes like that. Bloop, bloop, like
oh
that.
Yeah,
it just didn't have the bloop bloop at the very end, but the do first part is very Pac-Man,
very Pac-Man-y.
Yes,
it was pretty good. Mm-hmm. I saw him like he went down to deactivate the lightning shield. He turned the knob to the left, and then he turned it back fast to the right, and I was like, that's a weird knob. You got to go kind of slow that one way and then turn it back the other way fast. It was kind of funny.
I didn't catch
but
that.
But I'll buy anything.
Yeah. Like, sure. Why not? She grabs the microphone to talk to Captain Proton. She whips the cord. We hear the whip sound. And she's still in character. She's like, Arachnia to Proton. She doesn't say, you know, Janeway to Paris. Yeah. She's still in character, which is amazing.
amazing.
The background symphony is still happening. Yes. Great job. The music is still
and
going.
She does say to him, "I don't know how to tell you this," but when she fires at him earlier.
Yeah.
"I don't know how to tell you this." Bang, she shoots him, but the wedding is off, which I love.
Really good.
Yeah. Paris calls for the destructo beam. Yeah. The doctor pushes it.
He pushes the same button that turns it on. So really pushing that button would turn it off if you're thinking of it, but it's
Chaotica's knob that works both ways. It's the same.
Yeah.
Pretty old technology.
Mm-hmm.
So Chaotica dies really big. It was amazing. and then Janeway says, Chakotay calls and says, things are good. You know, it seems
distortions are closing. We're realigning with the normal space. That's the shot from the bridge.
And then she says, "Give me a minute," which was an odd little,
why is she sentimental here? Yes. That's what I put a question mark there. Like, why did she ask for that minute there?
Yeah. Sort of
to give some homage to him for being as you know, amazing as he was as an evil conqueror. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I'm not sure what's going on there. But Proton, Buster Kincaid, the president, and Satan's robot burst through the doors.
Yes.
We all run in there. And the robot's running faster than he ran before, I noticed.
He's doing good.
Sprinted in there. Chaotica speaks one last time. He still has a little last breath of life in him. And then he expires.
And then he does say, "You have not seen the last of me, of
Chaotica." Right. But then we're drawn to some sounds from the Imagizer, and we walk over there and we see it broadcast the end. And then a question mark at the end with Chaotica's evil laugh at the end.
Yes. There. Yes.
Oh my God.
Very good.
Really, really good.
Great episode.
I don't even know. Did you come up with a lesson?
I did.
You did? Okay,
I have a lesson.
Go.
My theme or my lesson from this episode is that you can take care of business and have fun at the same time. That's the lesson I got. Like, we took care of business. We, you know, we dealt with our mission of the week, but we had fun doing it. And why not? Why not? That's my lesson.
Okay. I'm gonna leave it at that. I don't have a lesson. I was too engaged in the episode to even think of a lesson, to be honest.
This was just an entertaining.
This is just a fun. Yeah. This is just all about entertainment and fun. And, you know, this was our, I don't know how would you even describe this? This is just our
it's an amazing episode. That's
amazing. It was just an amazing episode.
It had the whole cast involved. Yeah. It had comedy. It had, I mean, I guess, you know, maybe one complaint is there weren't really deep stakes. I mean, I guess there were, but you know, the shit we were getting pulled into subspace. I mean, maybe that could have been amplified a little bit. So the stakes felt a little more serious, but we spent most of our time in the fun, entertaining world. So
yeah, we did. What's your rating?
Oh, my rating. I just
asked you. What is your rating? Since this is Captain Proton, I'm going to go with you first.
Okay, I'm going to give this a 9.5.
Wow!
Yes, I think this is one of our best episodes ever.
Goodness. Mm-hmm. Okay.
I'm just right up my alley. Aside from the fact that, yes, I had a bit of, you know, work to do in the episode, but that's not why I value episodes, whether I had a big role or a small role. Mm. I think this was just a really good episode. I think a lot of it rests on Martin Rayner's shoulders. Mm-hmm. He centered it in a way, but the whole cast, our Lonzak, our everybody was so good. You were great. Okay, Bob was great. Yeah. Everybody was really good. Constance Goodhart was great. I think it was, I'm going to give it a 9.5. What about you?
I'm going to give it, I'm not going to go as high as you, but I'm still going to go high. I'm going to say 8.99.
Okay. Okay.
Okay. 8.99. That's what going to give it. All right.
So we're both pretty high. Okay. I would say between you and I, our average is about 9.2.
Okay. So that's the average of Team Delta Flyers. Yes. So
what is here I have the Admiral and Captain rating for Bride of Chaotica.
Mm-hmm.
Their average, we were 9.2 average. Their average, 8.7.
Oh. Oh, wow.
8.7. Interesting.
Yeah. So closer to my original.
I was guessing it was
going to
go higher than that.
Mm-hmm. 8.7.
I think, you know, I think one of the reasons, I mean, if I had to be super picky, I think that it's always hard in a holodeck because you're playing a character.
Yeah.
But you also have to play that you're still your character.
Right.
You know,
right,
that our crew members, Janeway and Paris and Harry, those characters aren't actors. They're real people on a starship in our story. So they shouldn't be great actors in any holodeck. They should still be pretty much themselves, a version of themselves. And I guess, you know, you might take away some points for the fact that all of us sort of dove into these characters a bit and were play acting. Definitely, I think Paris does quite often dive into the Captain Proton role. Kate as Janeway diving into Arachnia, she definitely embraced that character.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess if that bothers you that the characters are able to act like other characters in the holodeck, maybe that's a criticism. Maybe the stakes weren't high enough that the subspace danger was really significant in some way. But
regardless, 8.7 is still a very high rating though. You know,
it is.
You can't say that that's like horrible. That's still very, very good. So, Okay.
Yeah.
There you go, everybody. That's our discussion on Bride of Chaotica. I almost said Captain Proton. That is our discussion on Bride of Chaotica. Woohoo!
Yeah.
All right. And Patreon patrons, please stick around for your bonus material where we will have our conversations with our guest stars.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, and join us next week when we will be reviewing the episode Gravity.
Ooh, that'll be exciting. Awesome. Thanks, everybody.
Bye.